Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
This is Why Always Us. It's your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee is here as well. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
All right. Anticipating a busy week, so I might have a bit of a quiet Monday.
Good, good. Good to hear it. You can read everything on The Athletic and more right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod and sign up. You'll get these podcasts without the ads as well, so sign up at theathletic.com/ManCityPod. Let's start today's show, Sam, with the big news of the week. And we are, of course, talking about Guardiola's jumpers because the guy's just incredible, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's been so much to keep up with in the last 24 hours. I mean, obviously less than that as we speak. But yeah, if people haven't seen, he bumped into he's an English football coach, speaks Spanish, Alex Clapham. He likes to go to City games and loads of games, but City in general, I think. And he bumped into Guardiola in town and he was wearing, what is it, like a red and pink jumper.
It's pink and pink. Looks like it's been photoshopped onto him. It's like it's an incredible image.
Yeah, I mean he's worn the odd red thing in press conferences, but normally, you know, kind of understated colours, you know, blacks, greys, that kind of thing. Just when you think you know someone, eh?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Let's start with the news that everybody is here for, Sam, and that is what David Ornstein has put out today, that Haaland to City is, I guess the phrase we could say is as close to being a done deal without it actually having been signed. Is that right?
Yeah. That is obviously, yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's a good way to put it. It's been this way for a while, possibly more than a week. So it's at the stage where all that needs to be done is sort the buyout out, and that doesn't have to be paid now. I think, you know, City could say, we're going to pay this buyout clause, you know, however these things work with all the contracts and stuff. And there could even be an announcement soon. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Like, with announcements, you know, when deals are done, like, in summer's gone by, people will be asking me, like, oh, when's it going to be announced? When's it going to be announced? It's like, when the deals are done, like, the announcements are kind of completely at the club's mercy. And obviously now with the seasons are ongoing, like, when would be a good time to announce it? When would be a bad time to announce it? Would City not want to announce it at all? You know, would there come up where they're kind of forced? How would the announcement look? All these kind of things. So, yeah, there's little things to be sorted out with that.
Did Dortmund ever say that as well, though?
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They may well do. I mean, are they on the stock exchange as well? So once that kind of intention to pay the buyout clause has been put forward by City, that they have to say, okay, this is happening and it will happen on this date, or however that may look. And then, like I say, in terms of how it may look from City, once that's out there from Dortmund's end, because that's kind of their obligation, you know, will City say, okay, yeah, we can confirm we've signed so-and-so, or we will sign so-and-so on, you know, the 1st of July, and that'll be it, like quite low key, no pictures. Although I think pictures would be possible, let's just say that. So yeah, well, so again, with the announcement, we don't know, but yeah, exactly. I mean, that's obviously the big news. It's interesting, isn't it? Because like it's been like there's been so many whispers about it being done or it will be done for so long. Like I know, like I'm just seeing the tweets coming through again now. But obviously, Jack Gorn, when he wrote that, and this was when March maybe, when he wrote that. You know, there was kind of, you know, something had been, you know, there was some kind of expectation. It wasn't,
yeah.
Progress
was being made.
Yeah, like he wasn't saying it was done then, but it was kind of, you know, but I know he's been happy. He was like, well, I've said this in the past, so I don't need to say anything else, because as far as I'm concerned, and I've been like this in the past with transfer stories, it's like, well, I've said what I've got to say. So, and you know, this is the expectation. It's going to happen. Obviously, there have been developments about along those lines over the weeks, and I remember when there was another kind of, oh, he's agreed terms, that was in the mail as well. And then, you know, that was the day I did a podcast with it with Nader Manua. We talked about all that then. It's like there's been loads of little updates along the way about little agreements here and there, talks that have been held. But yeah, it has been kind of heading in the right direction for a while. Like I mentioned last week that I went to Norway during the international break to go and speak to people and see where he grew up and that kind of thing, you know, thinking that obviously, like, look, if he ended up going to Real Madrid, it could still be used. But, you know, ideally, me writing it for a City audience, that would be the way to go. So, yeah, went to Norway a month ago to look into all that because, yeah, it's kind of been headed in this direction for a while.
Yeah.
And, like,
Can I ask who you spoke to for all of that? Because it's like I'm always fascinated by these stories of, especially like it became a bit of a meme with you know, I went to such a buddy's hometown and found out about them. But like what sort of insight were you getting into it?
Oh, loads. And I've written the article already. I wrote it before I went away to Lisbon last weekend, just in case that this kind of breakthrough was announced sooner and it all happened a bit sooner. So I spoke to his first coach, which I suppose is the classic one, isn't it? But I won't go into it too much because there is loads. And, you know, might be able to even do a podcast on it with the interviews and stuff, although yeah. I used my iPhone on a table. So it wasn't the best recording equipment. I should have taken a microphone.
Listeners could literally hear my heart sink then.
I think it should work. I mean, it should. I do think the audio would be fine. Yeah, anyway. So it's interesting because obviously, academies in this country and in most countries, and even in Norway, you know, you've got age groups. They stay together. At the end of the year, they'll go, "You're not making the cut. So we found you this club, or we'll help you try and find a club. But basically, you're not playing for this club anymore because you're not at a certain level." But the environment that Haaland grew up in, there was 40 of them, 40 lads, from when they joined the club. So I think in Haaland's case, that was I can't remember now. I think I've been there since he was 5 maybe, but when he started in this, I think maybe 8. But like some of them, you know, it'll be like 8 until they're 19 or whatever, and they're kept together, this 40 of them, the whole way through. So even if they're not the best, they're given an option when they're 13, 14, 15. Which group do you want to be in? And there's two groups. There's the elite group and there's like the grassroots group. And the grassroots group, they do 2 training sessions a week, which are just like fun, and a game in like a lower division. Whereas the elite team, they do 4 training sessions a week and a game in a higher division. And their training sessions are more technical, tactical, as the coach said to me, is like more boring stuff. You know, it's more with a proper focus. And the kids themselves decide. You know, he said they don't let the parents decide. Otherwise, the parents would be like, oh, yeah.
He's going in the,
you know,
four,
they
yeah,
can
the
all
four
go
week,
in the elite,
yeah.
You know, we want to, but it's up to the kids. And he's like, there were some good kids in that group who just wanted to do the more casual agreement. So that, I mean, that, it's really interesting how that's built up. And like, he's made like friends for life in there. He's still really close with them. And my idea when I went to Norway was, I'm going to go and I'm going to speak to as many of these guys as I can, because there should be still not dotted around where he lives. And then, you know, get other numbers, and I'm going to speak to as many of these 40 as I can. But basically, they've had bad experiences with the media, and they've kind of closed ranks. So that's all in the article as well. So what I did in the end was I just went to the hometown, spoke to that first coach, spoke to another of his coaches. So the first coach was very good on kind of Haaland's formation and how he was kind of brought up and the things that he learned and, you know, the environment he was brought up in, because it's very kind of, they keep them together because it's all social. It's bringing them up as human beings. And I know in football clubs in the UK, there's a big emphasis on that, but it's more like kind of like a City's academy, for example. It's like, oh, if they can play for Rotherham or Blackburn, then, you know, we're happy, you know, that they've been able to come through and make a career out of football. Whereas at Haaland's team, it's more like, well, if they grow up and they go to university, then we're happy because they're good human beings.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how he was formed in that sense. The other coach was more candid on kind of Haaland's, like the less kind of obvious, oh yeah, well, he scored loads of goals. There was also, he used to get really angry, like if people didn't pass to him or if he lost the ball, this kind of stuff. Like there's some quite funny stories about him being really pissed off and that kind of stuff. And I did manage to speak to one of his former teammates who was good. He talked about that as well. They used to play Wembley doubles effectively. Like just the idea of a young Haaland charging around playing Wembley doubles is amazing. But like the hometown itself, and I think I was glad that I was able to do this article in the end, rather instead of, you know, speaking to as many of the 40 lads as possible, because the hometown is an incredible little place. It's like 12,000 people, 12,900, something like that. But you go to small towns abroad, like maybe people have been for Champions League games or for work or whatever, and it's like there's nothing to do and you just sit in your hotel bored. There's stuff to do in Brina, which is where he's from. It's a town called Brina. There's stuff to do. It's a nice place. There's nice places to go, good food. There's a bar that I went in, which had one person sat at the bar at that point, and this was half an hour before Norway kicked off. Had one person in it, and it was... exactly the kind of bar you'd find in the Northern Quarter. Like really nice places to go, but just really quiet. Just nobody about. Rather than there's people, but there's nowhere to go. It's like there's places to go, but no people. It's just interesting. And there's an Alfie Haaland like sticker that's been put on the wall of an Indian restaurant. There's takeaways with signed Haaland shirts on, because you know he still goes back and has takeaways because his diet, you know, when he's not playing, is a bit mental, you know, eats like an absolute horse. So there's loads of interesting things like that. That, I mean, I'll probably bored you enough about, but yeah, kind of how that upbringing when he moved back there, because obviously he was born in Leeds, so he moved back to Norway when he was three. How that's all kind of come together to make him the player he is. And also he was pretty skinny. Like he was quite tall, but there's loads of pictures of him everywhere. Like if you go to the football club, there's just pictures of him all over the walls and stuff, like everywhere, even though he only played like a season, like 15 games or something like that before he went to Molde. He's just like kind of just skinny. It's quite unusual actually, because obviously he's a beast now, but the main thing was people were like, because he played up an age group and he played against like big strong centre backs who played for like Norway's under 18s and stuff like that, so they were good and strong, and he was like, so he had to think quick and move quick and all that. And his teammate said, you know, he always got in on goal anyway, even though he wasn't the biggest, but now he is the biggest. He can do it that way as well. Like he's just kind of got everything.
Yeah, beast mode activated sort of situation.
I don't know.
I just went onto the Wikipedia page of Brino while you were talking, and I can't explain why I find this so funny, but the first section of it just says shopping. Brino has three shopping malls, and then kind of goes into detail about what they are.
I don't know where they would be. I saw one. I was there for 2 days, a lot of time at the stadium, having a bit of a walk around. There's an amazing pizza place there, absolutely fantastic. The guy was giving it the talk. He was like, oh, you know, with most pizzas, people put too much yeast in and they still expand in your belly and they make you feel full. He was, after this, you could run a marathon. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But honestly, so good. Like a genuinely fantastic pizza. But Haaland goes to, there's another one down the road, and I think he has the kebab pizza, which I was speaking to some young lads and they're absolutely raving about the kebab pizza. I think it's, I don't know if it's in that, just in that area or just those lads or whatever, but apparently it's quite, that kebab pizza is a bit of a Norwegian thing, apparently.
I was going to say that phrase. I've never heard that phrase before, but
what, kebab pizza?
Yeah,
Oh man, I used to love them when I was 15. Actually, yeah, maybe it's just like a 14, 15-year-old thing, because when I started to go out and watch football and have a drink and stuff, so 15, 16, 17, the kebab pizza, yeah, that was a they were very good, but I mean, yeah, clearly absolutely terrible for you.
Yeah, well, I look forward to more info from the Brian Tourist Board in future podcasts, Sam. we'll chat about it more as the story develops.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
I also want to talk about Guardiola this week, because after the game, you wrote about, well, Guardiola going full Bert, really, is the way that I've phrased it. I want to play this clip first off, which opened up the post-match press conference. James Ducker of The Telegraph started by asking if he was pleased with the reaction of the team after Wednesday. This is then what happened.
Did you have any doubts?
Yeah.
Too many today.
You're a Liverpool fan, come on. I'm sorry, James. Very pleased. Perfect afternoon. Just before the start of the game, I felt in our crowd that they were disappointed but not grumpy and upset and sad about who we are as a team and what we have done today, we have done the last 5 years in every 3 days, so. And three more points and three left. One competition to play and big problems behind, because we have just three defenders for these three games, but we will do it in terms of, we're going to try to, now what happened yesterday with Liverpool and to our game today, Wednesday become absolutely a final for us. If we are able to win, maybe we are able to arrive in the last game at home with our people to try to make back-to-back. And that's why Wednesday is absolutely final, and I'm pretty sure we'll prepare well.
Guardiola also said to Be In Sports that everyone in this country supports Liverpool, the media and everyone, and he followed that by adding that Liverpool has history in the Champions League, but only won Premier League in 30 years. It was a little bit... kind of Lampard-esque with the no, but seriously, way that he kind of flipped the answer around, Sam. Is this simply just following on from when we said a few weeks ago that he is just having so much fun in these press conferences at the moment?
I guess. But I mean, obviously, there's also, we talked about this so much over the years, like when he's got something on his mind or wants to get off his chest, he will just do it. He will find a way. But obviously, the interesting thing with these ones is it was the first question in the Be In interview and first question in the press conference. But in the press conference, he just full on, just straight off the bat, like straight into the "you are a Liverpool fan" thing. Obviously wanted to kick it off, but and maybe he wanted maybe he wanted more questions about it in the press conference,
yeah,
to kind of be like, what are you talking about, so he could go into it. But I mean, the secret to that really is, If a manager says something, there's going to be, make headlines, basically. And they, it's not a slip of the tongue and they mean it. So obviously, he knew what he said. And in the Be In interview, he was asked at the end, like, do you really think that? Like, it's almost like, don't risk ruining that by talking about it too much or watering it down or whatever. So it's just like, As soon as you said that, people were like, well, there's no point in doing a press conference now because that's going to be all people are talking about anyway. So it's like, that's already been said now. So he came in and obviously wanted to kick it off again. It's almost like, you know, the parallel is just like starting a fight. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There was like, if you were a dick and you wanted to go out in town, you'd be barging into people and like trying to initiate something. That was basically, you know, he was obviously trying to initiate something. He was obviously trying to get it off his mind, off his chest. Sorry,
he'd done being first, hadn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So he'd done it first, and we, you know, we'd seen on Twitter that that's what he said. So he's like, right, okay, well, let's just let him crack on with that. Because again, you just know that that's all people will be writing about. And talking about. But I mean, look, when we had this kind of argument a couple of months ago, when I was like, oh, do people get sick of thinking or being told that, oh, City are evil and corrupt, and also sick of people going, oh, City are perfect? Like, do you not just like feel you can be in the middle? That obviously led to a big agenda debate again, and obviously this has as well. And it's like, I've kind of been characterized as saying, like, the media never do anything wrong, or there's not bad media coverage of City. But like, some of the conversations I have are like pure Blue Moon Forum. Like, I was driving home from the game last night on the phone to someone, and like the kind of stuff I was saying wouldn't look out of place on Blue Moon, in terms of, I thought this was shit, I didn't like that, and I think broadly this is rubbish, you know, I don't like that. So like, I know there's certain things that aren't good or for whatever reason, but at the same time I also know for a fact that there is no concerted agenda. Like there is a conversation to be had. There are interesting things about the coverage around City. But obviously, you know, it's not like a concerted effort where, you know, we've got to criticize this club at all costs. It spans a network of editors and journalists cooking up stories. You know, the famous thing, oh, there must be a big game. There must be a big City game on if this story's coming out. They're all fucking big games. You're trying to win the league. You got Liverpool a point behind. You know, you're not, like, they're all big games.
Three points behind.
Well, yeah, now. But you know, but I'm talking about the stories that, you know, even yesterday there was one about, you know, the Premier League about to reach a decision on the investigation into City. But with that, it's like, there is an investigation into City. What are we supposed to do about that? So there's certain things where it's like, oh, why is that being mentioned? It's like, well, because it's a fact. But at the same time, there is stuff where I'm like, you know, I'm not sure about that. So yeah. But obviously, Guardiola has kind of been brought up in that. And you know, if you think back to the press conference on Friday, the embargo bit, when he was talking about, you know, well, my boss has told me about FFP, and you know, if they'd have lied to me, I would have gone. But obviously, they weren't lying. So he was like.
I was going to say, I do have those clips. So let's hear them, because all of this came out after you said about the embargo. This was the first moment he kind of dropped in it.
Every single word I said in all my press conference, even people don't believe me. Every word I said is because I truly, truly, truly believe it. And when I defend the club and the people, it's because I work with them. And when they're suspicious or the people say accuse something, I ask to them, tell me about that. And when I say this, like that, and like that, okay, I believe them. Because I said to them, if you lie to me, the day after I'm here, I will be out and you will not be my friend anymore. So I put your face because I believe you completely 100% from the day one. And I defend the club because it's that. Because when we put some, you know, here and there, we do it, it's overpaid. But the other, because the money come, but the money come from states or in other places, that the money is correct. Even it's higher, but it's correct. We have to deal with that. We have to fight for that. We have to handle with that.
Then the follow-up question was basically asking if he was ready to leave had the CAS decision gone the other way, because obviously that would have meant that people at the club hadn't told him the truth. And this is what he said.
What the cast say, what I said, means a lot to all of us. Because at the end break, I don't know if break, but at the end break, all the suspicion, I cannot forget, it was nine teams in the Premier League want to sack the Manchester City for the league, for the European competitions. They push. these nine teams, and I know here who they are. I know. So I like when the cast go there in that moment and said they did it properly. Of course, it would be a big contradiction for me because maybe I would still believe in the guys who tell me what they have done. It was a situation 2012 or 13. So I was in Barcelona in that time, I think so, or still there. So in most of the people now we are running that were not here. So, but would, of course, I would not love it. I would not like it because at the end, would I like the most represent a club, like do the things properly well? You know, it's not about winning the Champions League, winning the Champions League or winning the Premier Leagues or winning the Premier Leagues. We want to do well for especially, because for the rest it's not going to happen. Our people, our fans, that they was, I remember some comments that 20 or 30 years ago, they were playing to not being relegated in third division and fourth division here in England. And 20 years later, we are playing in semi-final of the Champions League. And we have to do the things that our people sense. Okay. And I had the feeling they are proud, you know, the reaction of our fans and the way in Madrid, you know. They are okay, and this is the biggest compliment that we can have.
So that was from the Friday pre-match, Sam, and it kind of all builds up into the comments after the game.
Yeah, it does really, because you know it shows that you know from his point of view on the inside, if what he's saying is true about you know he told them you know what is going on. So when all the FFP stuff was going on, he was obviously like right. What is happening? And they said, look, nothing. We'll be able to prove it. He's gone, right, great. And obviously, from his point of view, he was like, well, if they are lying to me, I'm going to go. And obviously, there was CAS, and they obviously said, we'll get it sorted at CAS. And it was. So he's thinking, right,
he said that at the time as well, didn't he? He did say, they've told me and I trust them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And obviously, now he's saying he would have walked if they hadn't have done. But obviously, from his point of view, he's like, well, they told me this. It was proven to be true. I believe it to be true. Still, people are talking about it. He obviously mentioned those nine clubs who, you know, there was the press conference after the CAS verdict, and you know, it was another one of those Guardiola classics, wasn't it? Where he was talking about the nine clubs. And I think even beforehand he talked about them. So it's all this stuff about, you know, why are they on our case? I think you know, he's basically seen a lot of agenda talk over the years at City, because you know, people at the club firmly believe it. People at the club kind of fuel it. And you know he's kind of taken bits of that, bits of what he's seen himself, bits of you know the CAS stuff and all of that, and kind of come to the conclusion. You know, I'm sure you know maybe the issue of, because the thing with Guardiola is like, why now? And obviously with CAS, it's like, well, it's obvious because you know the CAS decision's just come in, and now he's taking this opportunity to do it. And like you'd say, from a kind of give yourself some wiggle room. You know, maybe say this at the end of the season if you've got that trophy. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've got the trophy and say, oh, well, you know, it's a great achievement because everyone in this country supports Liverpool. It's like, well, but obviously now, if City were to mess it up, it would be horrific. And obviously, there'd be an incredible amount of schadenfreude against Guardiola, you know, given, you know, he's had a bit of a dig. So in that kind of why now, I think, I'm guessing this kind of come to a head, and he saw a lot of, you know, reaction to City's exit and Liverpool going through, and he's probably just like, you know,
enough's enough.
You know, this has been bubbling away for a while, so I'm going to mention it. And obviously, he did it in his own way, like bringing it up from the first question, which is what I did with the overthinking stuff. Like, you could tell the overthinking stuff the other week, it just came into his head from the very first question, and he was like, oh, okay, I'm going to run with this. But whereas with this one, it was still the first question, but I think he probably had it in his mind a little bit before, maybe, because you know he was talking about the way he talked about that mental weakness question on Friday, and the stuff about conceding goals. Like, he'd obviously been reading what had been said, and he gave long answers to a lot, but he gave a long answer to that one, saying like, you know, trying to debunk it basically. So maybe it's like the coverage of City's exit. But again, I would say with that, I don't think that's so much anti-City stuff as it's just a general thing the football media have, where when a team loses, everything has to be terrible. And if a team loses in a terrible way, everything has to be doubly terrible. Like, if there's a big, shocking, impactful, emotional defeat, the inquest has to be massive, and there has to be a big problem or a big scapegoat. And I think you bake into that the fact that normally when City lose a big game, it's Guardiola who gets the blame. I think you've got a culture there where fans and media are looking around saying, well, this was a big fuck up. So who are we hauling over the coals for this? Well, it's normally Guardiola. So, oh, his lineup wasn't weird in our opinion. So maybe it's just subs. Okay, yeah, maybe it's the subs. Let's just say Fernandinho, or let's just say Mahrez, or blah, blah, blah. I thought the subs were fine, but Graves. And the other one, obviously, is, okay, well, maybe his teams are mentally weak because they don't have strong characters, which, by the way, is absolute bollocks. There's obviously something in, and I went on Premier League TV on Thursday, so I ended up, my flight was delayed, and I was supposed to do a Premier League thing on Zoom, but the way it was, I landed at Heathrow, which is like 15 minutes from the studio, so I went into the studio. I was stood in front of a big screen, which had the goals conceded, and this was just City, but obviously there's some at Bayern as well, of City in like a couple of goals or three goals in like a short period. And like, look, this is something that Guardiola's talked about in terms of needing to react better in those moments. And, you know, even Guardiola's talked about Edison when he kicked the ball long straight after kickoff. I don't think he was saying he shouldn't have kicked the ball long, but just wait a bit. And look, that is not a great emotional reaction. But I was stood there in front of this massive screen with the numbers on. I was like, well, look, when you put it in black and white, okay, it looks terrible. But like the last example is Lyon a couple of years ago, and you're telling me they haven't improved in this since Lyon.
Yeah, this, okay. Look, I did a very similar interview on Thursday, I think it was, for BBC Sport, and it was kind of let's get a fan's eye view of this, and that question again was put to me about the about a mentality problem where City can concede several goals at once. And my other part of this was, can we really say it was three goals in, what was it, 6 minutes, when there's a break of like the end of the game in the middle middle of all that? I don't think it's a I think it was after chatting with you on last week's second podcast, Sam, where we talked about you know, they've come through strong games. They've come through really big Champions League ties where they've had setbacks in the last couple of seasons.
Well, okay. since the Lyon one, they've got to the final and there was a problem with conceding two goals in a minute the other night. But it's almost like when you actually look at it, and like Guardiola actually said, there's no time to fall down and waste time. You know, okay, the Edison reaction wasn't great. Like, I don't know. Like, also that we know Edison is nerveless. We know Edison has like kind of almost no emotions whatsoever, let alone fucking negative ones. But if he did rush the other night, that kind of suggests that the pressure that Real Madrid put you under in that moment is incredibly high. And okay, if you can't put up with that, then
so be it. What? Things happen. Yeah.
Oh, it's not ideal, is it? But what are we saying? What are we saying about Edison? Like, are you trying to find a more nerveless goalkeeper than Edison? Well, it doesn't fucking exist, mate. I'm sorry, it doesn't exist. And like, okay, maybe he could make more saves or better saves. Oh, he made a couple of good ones yesterday, and he does make good saves. But I would say he could maybe make more saves. But if we're talking about in that moment, nerves and mental character and stuff, you went finding one. So what are we saying, really? Also, I think everyone's been asked about this because I was speaking to Nadim, and he was saying he was asked about it, and he was like, you're describing momentum in football matches. Like in big football matches against top teams, I do think there's obviously something in it. There's obviously some element of, I don't know. Like you look at it and think maybe it can't be a coincidence, but it's. I've read two articles about it, and it's been linked to that Zlatan Ibrahimovic quote. About, you know, he doesn't like strong characters, he doesn't like leaders, he likes obedient little school children or whatever. And it's like, hold on. So then that's the kind of the implication there is, this is happening not just to Guardiola, but because of Guardiola.
Yeah.
And okay, in terms of like, if you're trying to make the game, so the other night against Real Madrid, they weren't playing many balls in behind City. They were playing a very kind of compact, safe game. And I'm not going to criticize because it was very nearly enough to get them through.
It worked for 89 minutes. Yeah,
exactly. The approach of that game, City weren't great by any means, by their standards, but it was obviously getting them there with that kind of approach of, okay, we're not suffering any counter attacks tonight, lads. We're going to play a game where we don't invite it. Obviously, then if you're thinking, you know, if Guardiola's telling them, like, maybe like a bit like Liverpool, like, oh, they're so good on the counter, we cannot give the ball away. And then, you know, maybe if they do give the ball away and they score, you think, fuck, like, it's happening. But again, like, Liverpool scored 45 seconds after half time or whatever it was in that game of the league, and then City went on and were the better team in the second half again. So that reaction, it is there, it can happen, it does still happen. They are much better at it. Okay, maybe they fell down a bit the other day, but this idea that it's, and you know, so yeah, maybe Guardiola's preparations for games does kind of lead to the team going, oh shit, he told us not to do this and it's happening now. And when you're in Real Madrid and when you're in Anfield, and you know, and the fans are starting to get on your back and they sense a bit, maybe it is like, oh shit, this is difficult to deal with. And it is, because these are the top teams in the world.
But
the main thing is, it's Guardiola's fault, this, because he doesn't like strong characters, because Zlatan Ibrahimovic once said this. Hold on a minute. So Victor Valdez, Dani Alves, Gerard Piqué, Carlos Puyol, Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, Messi, David Villa, Alexis Sanchez, I don't know, Manuel Neuer, Philipp Lahm, Jerome Boateng, Alaba, Xabi Alonso, Toni Kroos when he was there, I'm forgetting some, Robin, Frank Ribery, Lewandowski, Thomas Muller, Schweinsteiger. Like, how many World Cup winners are in that? And are you telling me they're not strong characters? Because they don't go around calling themselves a lion.
Take a look at this City side. Are you honestly telling me that Kevin De Bruyne is not someone who voices his opinions?
Yeah. I made this point in my article at the weekend, kind of after the press conference. So I wrote a kind of second inquest, which was basically, what do you want? Like, okay, it's bad, but what do you want me to say? Although there is no, okay, we get rid of Guardiola, or Guardiola's a fault for this, or what, like, there's nothing. Oh, we get a better defender than Cancelo. There's nothing, you know, there's not much. It's bad, but the reaction doesn't have to match. So I wrote that, and then it was going to be published on a Saturday, and I was like, look, it feels too different now. It's too far gone. There's a bit more time for breathing. Guardiola's done his press conference. So I edited it, and I was like, look, this thing about strong characters just and like Guardiola not wanting them and not having them, it's just demonstrably untrue. It's people don't think, like, just because Ibrahimovic has said it. But also, like, why is Ibrahimovic the reference point here? I've just mentioned about 10 World Cup winners. Like, people have won the World Cup, people who are strong characters, people who have won more Champions Leagues than he has, if we're being honest. It's not really a Zlatan point, but at the same time, it's like, if you're thinking, here's another one for you. So between the goals, the Real Madrid goals, Edison kicks it long. Okay, big problem. He just went straight through to Courtois, gave them the ball back. He did it too soon. Not a great reaction. They attacked down their left. He got Cancelo, got past somebody else. I think Rodri stopped the guy in the box, gave it back to Cancelo, deep in the right back position. Only option there really was another hoof, or try and find Foden down the line. Clipped it down the line, didn't find him. Came back into the middle. They went down the right. They put the ball in the box. Asensio got that flick on, and it helped Rodrigo score, which is unbelievable. If we're talking kind of
fine
good luck for them or bad
luck
for City, it just, how has that happened? And if that flick hadn't have happened, where the fuck would that header have gone? City would have been going through, you know.
Yeah. Probably hits the side of his face and bounces the other way.
Unbelievable. But like, there was no time to react. But my point is, okay, so let's say they've got Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the strongest character in the world in that team. Are they not conceding that goal? Doesn't make any fucking difference. Doesn't make any difference. Like, especially if you're talking about this Real Madrid game. Okay, if you've got it's kind of like the implication is, the characters have to be strong enough to say, I'm not doing what Guardiola wants. I'm just going to, you know, rally the troops or whatever, or bang a goal in or whatever. But it's like, well, this thing about Real Madrid, like, where does that come from? Like you say, like, even like shouting, it happened. It's Real Madrid. These things happen. We kind of talked about it before. It's not great. No, it's not like a complete, we're not saying City couldn't, you know, unlucky City. Look, you should have seen it out. If there's one thing that could have been improved, it was maybe, you know, maybe Cancelo's pass could have been better, but okay, difficult. Edison's pass should have taken more time, or just been fine, not great reactions. But like, these things happen. And just this idea that, oh, well, it must be Guardiola's fault because we need someone to blame. Okay, well, it must be the mentality. It's just, yeah, I don't get it. But also, the other thing I was going to say about this article I did was, I was like, well, City don't have, they don't have five or six World Cup winners each, like I reeled off before. That's, Bernardo Silva said before the Atletico game, he was, I think I'm right in saying only Scott Carson's won it. So I think there is an element of not being in those games, not having that experience.
Champions League, not the World Cup. I suddenly had a moment where I thought, has Scott Carson won the World Cup?
Only Scott Carson's won the Champions League, yeah. And like, there's no, you know, big... Gundogan would have been in that Germany squad, wouldn't he, for the World Cup? Maybe that was when he had his injury problems, actually, 2014. But anyway, Gundogan had been to a final before, fine. But I think we saw with the Champions League final that, as well as the tactics, they looked a bit inhibited, the players. And, you know, I do think those are like legitimate concerns, and you know, maybe there isn't that experience, but you know, this is part of it. You know, going to Real Madrid and doing that, you know, it's part of it. I think you're motivated to go again, as you saw yesterday. They were motivated to go again, and okay, they beat Newcastle at home, but there's a big game. You know, people were saying there's pressure to do this, there's pressure to do that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This whole week has got me thinking about pressure because had Liverpool beaten Tottenham, the pressure would have been there's pressure on them to keep up with them at the top of the table. They didn't, and then suddenly the pressure was on to take advantage after the pressure of having gone out in the Champions League of the way that they did. I mean, maybe there was just pressure on that game, come what may, and the players deal with it or don't deal with it or feel it or don't feel it in the way that fans do and the way that we talk about it. Maybe we read it all wrong. Maybe you know, they just look at each game as an experience they can build on and use as motivation for the next game rather than being shell-shocked by it, as this week seems to have suggested.
Yeah, well, like I say, I'm not sitting here and saying City are the perfect team. But again, part of my argument is they're fucking close. Like, if we're having an inquest, what are we at? What do we want? Like, how good do we need them to be? You know, if City had had a slightly more luck in the Champions League draw, and look, I don't want to go too far down the luck route because there's the Rodri handball and blah, 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 blah. But if City had have had a Champions League draw that allowed them to rest players for the FA Cup game against Liverpool at Wembley, I'm not saying City would have won, but a better chance that they would have got to the FA Cup final. And obviously, if you've got a bit of a better, more forgiving Champions League draw, then more of a chance of being in the final. But fine, like, it is what it is. But like, we're talking kind of fine margins here, and all of a sudden, you know, if a different ball gets drawn out, there's a good chance that we're talking about City going for a quadruple, and maybe Liverpool in the Champions League final as well. You know, maybe they're in the final as well. That's fine. I'm not saying Liverpool have only got there because they've had an easy draw. Not at all. These are the two best teams in the world by far. They are phenomenal. But just talking about the little things and how things can change, and obviously, kind of the impact that those Champions League games have had. With the injuries to City's defenders, we don't know how the league's going to go yet. Like Guardiola saying there that the Wolves game is like a final. I think what he's thinking there is if they win that, even if they were to lose against West Ham, He's not too bothered because he's like, well, we're back at home in front of our people on the last game. We just need to beat Villa to win it on goal difference. You know, I think that might be what he's thinking. Not that he's going to go to West Ham and think, okay, we'll forget this one.
Yeah.
But like, he might be fine with a draw at West Ham. You know, if City are 1-1 with 5 minutes to go, might not push too much because just need to beat Villa on the last game, which is fucking hell. It's not going to be good for anyone's nerves in that last week. But, you know, I think Guardiola, with the circumstances and the defensive problems, which have come from those Madrid games, and obviously Diaz against Newcastle, that's obviously how he's looking at it. So, yeah, things are all still up for grabs, but yeah, those Champions League games were very draining in terms of the other competitions. But you know, it's how it is. I'm just saying, you know, with a slightly different draw, you know, we'd be talking about City being amazing, and we wouldn't be talking about mental weakness or whatever. You know, maybe the problems are there, maybe they're not.
Maybe it just maybe the situation was maybe nobody could have dealt with the situation any differently. Do you know what I mean?
Well, considering this happened to PSG and Chelsea, I know City are better. But like, so this is interesting. So that was obviously my take on it from when we did our podcast. I've had a million conversations since then, because obviously that was basically the next day, wake up, go to the airport, do the podcast. And then all the conversations I've had since then have been so different. And, you know, people have had their views on different subs, and some, you know, some I've just been like, no, I'm not having that. And some have been like, okay, that's really interesting. You know, people who used to play, people who are journalists, people who are agents, people who are fans, whatever. And then, so I went to the Football Writers Awards on Friday, and we had a member of Marcelo Bielsa's staff on our table. So I think we got to the reception bit, and my boss turned up, and he was like, oh, what happened? And I can't remember if I'd said this already, or obviously I'd already said it on the podcast, but I can't remember if I said it in the group, or if he'd asked Bielsa's staff member first. And I had a long conversation later in the evening for about an hour, where it was kind of, you know, very gesticulative, talking about, you know, people, you know, movements, and it wasn't quite moving the salt and pepper pots around, but it was that kind of chat. And I mean, she knows more about football than I ever will. It's one of these, like, she knows more about football than most people in this room. And I mean, like, the only reason I say most is because there are a couple of like former managers in there, or like current managers, or managers looking for work or whatever. But like, so later on, I had this chat, and it was all like, clearly she knows what she's talking about, fucking infinitely more so than anyone else here in this room of journalists, myself included. But earlier in that, going back to the start of the night, she was like, it's Real Madrid. Like, it's just how it is. Like, and I was like, if that's the opinion of someone who knows so much, so in depth. But she was also saying that her partner is an analyst, and just like, they just watch football all day. But he was saying that he said about 45 seconds before they scored, you just need to keep putting balls in the box and they'll get a goal. And if they get one, they'll get another one. And I was like, that was grimly predictable, wasn't it? but then again, it's like, if you know that's coming, then surely you do bring Fernandinho on for 5 minutes. So I don't really mind that one so much. I know it leaves you short. If you go to extra time and you got Fernandinho in battle mode, it doesn't help you reassert yourself in the game. But you're thinking you got to concede two goals for it to go to extra time. You bring a man on to stop you doing it.
Yeah.
Like, the only one I'm not sure about, and I think I've written this, is I don't know whether that anticipated the attacks or invited them, or a bit of both. But I mean, look, it's Real Madrid. You know those. I'm sorry, but you know those attacks are coming. I know this has been a mad podcast. Loads of
we've been on a journey, haven't we?
I mean, we haven't even so. I think I've kind of said everything that about the strong characters thing is the thing that annoys me the most. Like, and this is to say that City don't have any. And okay, maybe in terms of multiple Champions League or World Cup winning, they haven't. But like, you're telling me that defending Premier League titles, look, if they do it again this season, that's twice they've successfully defended it in the last 5 years.
Four out of five years,
unbelievable. And like, in that 1 year they didn't win it, they were second.
Well, funnily enough, I didn't clip this up from Guardiola's Friday press conference as well. But again, in the embargo, the question was, if you successfully defend the title this season, it'll be four titles in 5 years, which is quite a good achievement. And Guardiola snapped in with, only quite a good achievement, or is it an awesome achievement, my friend? Yeah. Sort of thing. And it's like,
yeah, exactly.
And he's right.
Yeah, exactly. And like, and there's always this argument. Okay, well, the Premier League's different, and like the Premier League is different. And Guardiola said it himself. You know, in the Premier League, the players know they've got another game. When in the Champions League, there's more time. So maybe in those, it's more about time. Sorry, it's more like in that moment. And yeah, okay, maybe there is steps to be taken there. But okay, fine. It's a fuck. Is it not some kind of process? I don't know. Maybe it's easy just to go in and go bish bash bosh. We're winning the Champions League. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah. So in terms of the league, again, until City had won it in 18-19. No, that was the first time in 10 years that anybody had successfully defended it. Only Ferguson's team had done it, I don't know, three times maybe. Obviously, won three in a row, which is the next target for City. And with Haaland, you'll be saying it's a real target if they were to do it now. But like Chelsea have done it once, and that's it. Like Arsenal never did it. Obviously, Blackburn didn't. Obviously, Leicester didn't. Obviously, City didn't with Mancini and Pellegrini. Like, there's a lot to be said about this team, and okay, you know, maybe they do. Maybe there is something. Maybe it's something we've talked about. Maybe it's something we've not talked about. Maybe it's just bad luck or whatever. There is something obviously missing in the Champions League, but when you say it like that, oh, it's missing. Others so good, so much money. Okay, but like they're playing Real Madrid. Okay, if this was another Leon, which we said on Thursday morning, if this was another Leon, there would be an inquest. How has this happened against a team like Leon? But sorry, I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but City are obviously objectively better. But when it's Real Madrid, okay, City are better than Real Madrid, and they were better than Real Madrid over the two games. But there's obviously this kind of voodoo shit that they've got going on, which is just baked into the history of the club. And it's just how it is. In terms of a breadth of topics covered, Can we just go back to the Ornstein column and the other big thing in there, which is Paul Pogba?
Well, I forgot about this earlier on because I must admit I was greatly amused by your tweet about seeing Pogba was looking for another house in Manchester, and then and then you thought, oh, he can't be staying at United, and it turns out he might not be, and then it turns out that he's probably not coming across the city either.
Yeah, so Friday afternoon, I was having a conversation, and he was like, oh yeah, so-and-so does this and does this, and he's got a house that footballers let. And I was like, oh, here we go. I was like, if he says City are signing someone, this would be fucking brilliant. You know, if he says, oh, you know, Frankie de Jong's looking around it, or whoever, but great. And he was like, oh, and he goes, and Paul has been looking at it. I'm like, I was like, surely he's not signing a new contract. I was like, you know, maybe just buying something for his brother and whatever. And then he was like, I don't know if his brother sounds a bit more serious than that, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, fine. I was like, so I'll put it in the United channel. At work, like, see what you reckon to this. And obviously, the story came out in the evening, and I was like, "Shit, of course." But I'd been told around the end of March that he had been suggested to City during the Haaland negotiations. But I'm pretty sure the same info was, but City said no, forget it. And obviously, over the weekend, people have been like, "Is this really true? Is it just rumors?" With the blah blah blah. But like, I can say the City offered him a contract. City offered him a contract. But obviously, what I didn't know until I found out yesterday that Ornstein was going to write this is that, you know, Pogba's decided that, I don't know, there's not a lot of details in these two updates on Haaland and Pogba, but I will go back to that. And I'll say that for a very distinct reason. We will go back to it. I don't know. I get the feeling, shall we say, that I just think Pogba's realised, fuck me, that's not worth a hassle. But obviously, the way it's been written by Orny, and I've not asked him about it, is the way it's been written suggests he's accepted an offer from somebody else, but it possibly hasn't. You know, but maybe that information has been kept back either from him or he's not allowed to say. But I just want to say, Ornstein is absolutely fucking phenomenal, man. So I'm comfortable saying if I don't know about a transfer, because I'm pretty comfortable overall that I know enough. I would like to be better. I would like to be at the level of 2017, where it's kind of maybe knowing earlier. But I think, you know, with the Grealish thing last summer and all the Villa fans going mad at me for about 10 days, 2 weeks, and I was able to say, look, this is what's happening. This is what will happen. This is where it's at, with confidence. I'm fine, you know, I'm happy enough. I can still do that. I'm happy with that. With the Kane thing, we did more podcasts. I was less sure because I was like, look, I'm getting this info it's happening. But
it's
directly
contradicted
we've got,
by this info, yeah.
Yeah, by, again, David Ornstein and others, like Jack Pitbrook at Spurs. And I was like, this isn't just a press office saying it's not happening. This is real shit. I don't know what to believe. And obviously, in that case, obviously, I guess because my info was coming from City and people at City thought it was happening, whereas the reality was it wasn't. And I think it's since transpired that there was an agreed price, and I think people are giving me slightly different prices, but basically, City went back and said, okay, this is it. Or the price that Kane told City that it would take, and then Daniel Levy went, no, we want more. And it was like, fuck off. So I think that's basically what happened. I think that's why City were like, okay, it's happening, we're getting ready for this. And like De Bruyne had spoken to Kane and whatever. But like obviously all the way through, Ornstein knew even more about it, like, well, much more, in fact. And on the Grealish thing, even though I was like, okay, this is the situation, and that I remember there was a Monday when, do you remember that guy who was supposedly like an NFL insider said he was going to re-sign with Villa, and everyone was like, oh God, this guy's really good, he knows his stuff, he must know the owners or whatever, and it turned out to be a troll. But like, I knew because I'd spoke to somebody who knows Grealish, and he was on a Grealish desperate for the move, blah blah blah, so I was fine. But Ornstein knew much more in terms of where it was at, what the conversations were being held, why it was being held up. You know, this all came out afterwards in the how the deal was done, and it was an incredible article full of like, Villa phoned Real Madrid and Man United to say, do you want to take this? Because we don't want to sell him to City. You know, mad stuff like that, which, you know, I'm happy with the info I've got, more than happy. But he goes fucking way above. So same with Haaland. I've known for a while what's going on with Haaland, in the sense that, okay, it's in the post now. This is going to happen. I know when talks have happened. You know, when I did that podcast with Nadim, I was like, look, we can talk about this now because, you know, we're safe in the knowledge that, you know, this is heading in one direction. Harry Styles, the pun there. I've known how that's going. And the same with Pogba. Like, I know the City have offered him a contract. And obviously, I had that thing earlier in March about it being a possibility, but that was obviously slightly wrong because obviously City didn't reject it out of hand. They went down that route. And obviously now that it's been rejected, that leaves City in not so much as a tricky spot, but it's May now. We know City like to have their targets wrapped up. So they're going to have a couple of other alternatives on the go, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to bring news of that. But I just want to say, in terms of Ornstein and the columns, and the reason I said there's not much detail in them, like, nobody should mistake that for a lack of information. So I've seen a couple of tweets like, oh, you know, is this the guy that said this, or how do we know? Obviously, people know David Norton. If he says it, it's, you know, it's legit. But I mean, I just want to give you just the full confidence of where this is at. I mean, if this goes tits up now, the stories were not wrong. I was walking through Madrid last week, so Tuesday it was, and we had a catch-up call, like a conference call at work, and Ornstein basically laid out everything he knows, and quite probably stuff that he knew it wasn't allowed to tell us, and it's phenomenal. Right, and this was a week ago, right? And it's not come out yet, this stuff. Not, you know, it's not going to change the world, but in terms of the Haaland deal, our understanding of it, the mechanics of how these things work, the figures, all of this. So, you know, I'll be able to say, you know, if somebody had met me in a bar in Madrid before that, I'd have said, not that I was in one before because I just arrived, but or on the plane, I'd have been like, yeah, look, it's going to be done. Don't worry about it. It's all fine. This, you know, there were talks there and blah, 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 blah. Even, you know, this has happened. So I can chuck a few things into this, how the deal was done article myself. You know, I've got some good nuggets of information there. But what Ornstein was laying out last Tuesday, it's phenomenal. It's like the Grealish thing, really. And just in terms of, fuck me, like, how have you got all this stuff? Like, who is this coming from? But, you know, the kind of the price you pay for that. And I don't, you know, he'd never be able to say this himself. I mean, maybe I'm not allowed to say it, but because I think he still protected his source by, I don't think he even told us everything that he knows. Like, it's a kind of double-edged sword because he knows a phenomenal amount of things, but can't always say them and or can't even break them. Like, if he'd have been able to write everything he'd been told last Tuesday and put it out there, the world would have gone mad in terms of, fuck me, this is mad. Obviously, instead, it's 6 days later.
The bare bones are there, aren't they?
Yeah. It's 6 days later. All it is, you know, it's basically a done deal. You know, the release clause won't be paid, but it'll be, you know, City will signal their interest, blah, 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 blah. And you look at it and you think, okay, not a lot in there. but because it's Ornstein, and you know, you do almost, not, I don't want to use the word take his word for it, but you know, because of who he is, and I think, yeah, because of who he is, because of his reputation, hopefully because of our reputation, you know, it's not nothing, you know, it's significant. And I think that has been the reaction, you know, looking at my mentions, because obviously I tweeted the story from him, you know, all my mentions are kicking off saying this is amazing news. Everyone believes it. But I just want people to know that it's phenomenal what this guy is bringing to the table. And in fact, I don't think there's any issue with me saying this. He, and I think also others on the desk, they knew Arteta was getting his new contract as well last week. Weren't able to put the story out before, and I won't go into that. They knew Arteta was getting his contract. And obviously the other week when there was a couple of stories that City were opening talks with Klopp about his contract, Ornie was like, no, he signed it. 2-year deal, bang. And he had signed it. It was official. The information he's getting is fucking unbelievable. And it's, like, it's a bit annoying from my point of view, because maybe at some point in the last week, if he wasn't here, I'd been able to say, look, this is done. I don't know the fee. I don't know exactly what wages he's getting. I know how much the overall figure's going to be, the total price it'll cost. You know, I don't know some of these details, but we can say it's done. We can say, you know, he's going to come to City, and you know, maybe I'd have got a load more subscribers or a load more followers on Twitter or whatever, better reputation. But obviously, because Ornstein knows that much fucking more, he's just like knocking it out of the park. But it's just a kind of pleasure to work with and witness. So when we, you know, we talk about the article I've written about Haaland's background in Brina, like I'm hoping people will really enjoy that. When it's full Haaland mania, I'm hoping loads of people will read it, loads of people will enjoy it, and then I'll write how the deal was done with loads of on-scene info, some really good nuggets that I can provide myself that I don't think anybody else will know, I'm hoping. I'm sure others will chip in. Laurie Whitwell, fantastic. Adam Crafton, fantastic. They just know stuff. Oliver Kay, maybe. You know, be able to chip stuff in. It'll be a great read. And then we'll talk about how he's going to fit in at City and how it's going to look and how exciting it is and all that. So, yeah, I mean, this news this morning is the starting pistol, really, just in terms of, okay, it's happening now. The release clause is going to be paid. That was always the big update, which I referenced actually in that pod with Nadum.
Yeah.
That was always the big update that I hoped we were going to be able to do. And yeah, here it is. But like I say, the bigger kind of details of it, the real meat on the bones of it is coming. And look, I can say it on his behalf because it's nothing to do with me, really. It's not blowing my own trumpet. It's not that at all. Like if the details come out elsewhere, I know he'll be really annoyed. But, you know, these are the games you've got to play as a journalist. And look, if you want the kind of ins and outs of how it's done, there will be a lot of good articles on it. There will be. But on the one that will be on The Athletic, led by Orny and fed into by others, including myself, like it'll be a very interesting read.
Yeah, look forward to it, Sam. I'm gonna call it there for this week's show. We will catch up.
Yeah, there's plenty to talk about aside from the football, and considering City need to win.
Need 7 points.
If they win their next two games, they're laughing. But obviously, the defensive problems makes that laughter somewhat contained. Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, Wolves might be emergency podcast territory, and hopefully the good, you know, record in the seat, what a fucking win kind of territory. But, you know, if not, City have still got that cushion. So we shall see. We may speak later in the week.
Yeah, that's the end of this week's Why Always Us. Thanks as ever to Sam Lee.
Thank you very much. Thanks to everyone for following the various threads of that. If you've made any notes, I'd be interested in seeing them just so I can kind of link up my own thoughts. But if not, I'll listen back to it and try and work out what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, don't forget you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.